I'd like to acknowledge Australia's First Nation people as the traditional custodians of the land, and for this episode in particular, the Dharawal people. I pay my respects to their elders, past and present.
I just feel people happy to be there, and there's a real pleasure in spending time at a restaurant. And I think, you know, particularly I'm really grateful to front of house staff and, you know, that are dealing with customers, and it's a real joy having those conversations.
This is the Over the Glass podcast. I'm Shantae Whale. New Year's Eve celebrates the closing of one year and the welcoming of another. The possibilities, the dreams, and new hopes. It all comes together to create an atmosphere of anticipation and excitement. Whether you spend it with your work colleagues, family, friends, or strangers, it's a time for toasting and looking skyward to the future. Elizabeth Hewson is head of creative at Fink, published author and totally responsible for making mouths drool all over her home cooking. With her thirst for knowledge and learning, Lizzie has a vast repertoire of experiences that would make any foodie envious. Hi, Lizzie. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
How are you going in the crazy, silly season at the moment?
I feel like I'm limping to the finish line.
That's a great analogy, and I can totally feel that sentiment.
I'm not quite sure what's going to happen on the 31st of December, but I'm hoping for a really clean break. And then poof, a new year, new what do they say, new you? No, new year, new you, new me.
Yeah, totally. Exactly. And you're right. You don't know what to expect after the couple of years we've had. And, you know, we always say New Year's off with a bang, but I kind of feel like, oh, just a gentle kind of finish would be really nice, because we're all, like you said, a little wounded after the last couple of years. What are your plans for New Year's Eve this year?
So we're taking it very easy. I mean, we do have a bit of a tradition. I live in Erskineville, which is a suburb of the Inner West, and we have quite a few friends. It's a real community vibe. And we actually house hop. So we do a course at each house around the street. There's three houses. And we're not actually doing that this year because we're renovating. That's the other thing I'm just adding to the end of the year, is to move out of our house. And another friend's just moved around the corner. So we're going to be put there and enjoy a long, leisurely meal.
Wow. I remember last year when you did that little house hop, and I just remember thinking, that's a genius idea. And I actually saw somebody else kind of take your idea, like a lot of your ideas, and then recreated as well. So, I mean, was that really quite hectic, or did it work really well?
So the first year worked really well because we got the starter. So our little, we live in a tiny terrace, and it opens up to a back park. So we did, cocktails and a few snibbles at our snacks, and then we moved on to the next house for the first course. So that was really easy. Last year I drew the short straw and I got the midnight shift, which is midnight till when everyone's ended. And I mean, for me, nothing good happens past midnight. So I found that the difficult shift. And I think I piped as soon as the fireworks ended. And no one wants to eat at that time. And for me, like, cooking's my love language, and just felt like, yeah. So this year it'll be good. We'll be able to all bring a plate, and no one gets the short straw.
That's perfect. And I agree with you. The fireworks are great, but then sometimes after New Year's, it is all downhill from there. What are your tips for surviving till the fireworks? I know a lot of people just think that that's way too late.
Oh, look, it is. And now that I've got Louis, who's 21 months, my son, midnight is a real stretch. And to be perfectly honest, you know, sometimes I won't quite make it there. I have hopes for this year, and my tips would be a well-paced meal. And so something that is, you know, people can graze over the night, and that brings, you know, you back to the table, and good booze, of course.
Of course, 101.
Yeah, a little pick-me-up at midnight.
Yes, absolutely. And you're right, it's so important to eat. I actually feel that a lot of the time people are so excited, and particularly this year, we're so excited to be out, to be dressed up, to be seeing people. People need to remember, they need to put food into those little bellies of theirs.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the best part of coming together.
It is. You're right. Eating and drinking and good company. Now, I wanted to touch on your book because Saturday Night Pasta was released in 2020, a very appropriate time for home cooks. What was the reception to your book? I mean, I certainly saw it and it, gosh, just all the photography, all of the recipes, it just makes you hungry, but it also just makes, it almost feels like a bit of a warm hug. And how was it received?
Oh, thank you. Look, it was received really well and I was super nervous about it because for me, I'd sort of discovered the power of carving some time out for yourself and cooking and, you know, cooking just for you about 3 years ago. And it was a time that I was going through a really anxious period and I was struggling to find ways to cope. And I just fell into making pasta and that whole meditation and kneading and channeling something, you know, like a really shitty week into the dough and then going through that process, you know, and then you end with this delicious meal that you can sit down and enjoy for yourself. So I sort of had discovered that about 3 years and I found that really helped me. And I think 2020 was obviously a difficult year. You know, the pandemic set foot and we all were forced to, you know, be in lockdown and mentally that was a really hard thing for people to deal with and it still is. So I think it came at a good time as a way for people that, you know, it wasn't a straight yoga or, you know, a meditation and that maybe that was a hard thing for people to approach. It was kind of doing it through something else and something that was completely different to that in a sense. So I think people really, it was received really well and actually much more than I thought. And I was really nervous putting that kind of message out there about those, you know, everyday anxieties and that I was kind of going through because, you know, I wondered how people would take that. And so many people said to me, I had no idea. And it was great to have that conversation because the amount of messages I get and still get of people saying I really connected to that sentiment and, you know, it's that ordinary, everyday, you know, pace of life that it's great to have the conversation that it can be really difficult and to find a way of dealing with it that's maybe not, you know, that you wouldn't ordinarily connect and think about doing and finding that activity or that moment that's just for yourself. And for me, that was pasta making and in a sense cooking really. So it was really nice that people picked that up and found that too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what I like about what you all just said is that, you know, we do have this pace of life that we go through and not always do we have time to sit down and necessarily meditate. But if we can have that presence and that kind of tuning out, doing something that still is part of life, I think that we can just be healthier individuals. And, you know, I think hopefully a lot of people did when they're in lockdown, find those little nuances that they could use that said, actually, I'm going to make room for this when everything starts back up again. I'm going to make room in my life for this because it's been so rewarding now. So I think the book is so beautiful. And yeah, and I think I can totally understand why it has reached so many people. And even your social media, Saturday Night Pasta, is massive. I mean, it every week I see people, you know, getting on board and it's been pretty huge.
I mean, it just fills my cup seeing people make, you know, on their Saturday night pasta journeys. And, you know, for me, it was really important to have that conversation and to, you know, find that, I guess, in a sense, that meditation really is what we're talking about, but just not in the way people always think about it. And so watching people go on that journey and the complete joy it brings people, and you know, not only is it the process but the end result too of this delicious bowl of pasta. And I think making pasta doesn't have those pressure points that baking does, for instance. You know, will it rise or the right temperature? And, you know, pasta making can be really straightforward. And, you know, sure, it might not be restaurant or award-winning pasta, but at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter because it'll be just as delicious for you. And I think seeing people discover that has been really special.
Yeah, there's so much pride in that. It's so well said. I think with some of the roles that we have, especially in kind of restaurants, there's a lot of misconception around kind of what people do. What is, you know, kind of the most rewarding part of your job in creative communications? And can you tell us a little bit about kind of your day-to-day life?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, the best part, I mean, it's just a real privilege for me to tell stories about our restaurants and our people and the producers. That is what gets me out of bed. And I love storytelling. And, you know, comms and marketing is an opportunity to share what, you know, for our restaurants, what makes them really special. And I feel enormously privileged to work with the people I do and the chefs I do and all the sommeliers I do and all the front of house. You know, that's what makes those stories really unique. So as head of creative for Finc, my job is, I mean, basically I'm across every creative decision that happens across those restaurants. And a day-to-day, it's very different. I mean, it could go from catching up with, you know, one of the chefs and discussing what's new, what's coming down, who are they working with, what stories can we tell, to looking ahead and planning and strategizing for the year, which, you know, in the last 2 years is next to impossible. So it's also then being agile and being able to respond, because restaurant marketing is not like traditional, you know, other industries where you can be pretty well planned. You know, restaurants to a point, and it always has been, you've had to be quite agile and respond to, you know, what's happening, how are people eating, how are people dining, and looking ahead at those, you know, trends and then going, okay, how are we going to respond to that with being, you know, and being leaders in the industry as well. So it's a very, you know, I guess fast paced job and fast paced industry, and it can look completely different because it could be having conversations with those people. It could be being in venue and seeing it for myself, because sometimes I get down there and, you know, no one's told me about something just because they haven't, you know, felt that maybe it wasn't, you know, relevant. And then you sit down there and you go, wow, that's really special. So then it could be sending out and, you know, connecting media and telling people about it and showcasing our venues as well. Yeah, and a lot of communication, a lot of stakeholder management in my position.
I mean, you've been working for Finc for around 12 years, which is incredible. What's your advice for people that want to get involved or enter your world of communications marketing?
It's passion. You know, for me, you can learn, you know, everything you need to learn from good people, but it's to have a passion. I mean, I had my first experience at Key. I was working for a PR agency and they took me along to the meeting, and Pete was doing a menu tasting, and this was before, you know, Key had really hit the big time. It was definitely well known and well received, and Peter was doing some amazing things. Maybe he was at Key for 2 years at the time, and we went in there and no, he would have been longer actually now I think about it, but we went into the restaurant and he was, you know, put these dishes in front of me, and I just remember, you know, I was 20 maybe, and my mind was blown. I mean, I just had never experienced anything like it. And I remember the moment he put down this dessert, and you know the dessert I'm going to talk about, but he put down this dessert in this beautiful Riedel glass, and it was the snow egg. And I'd never tasted anything like it. I mean, the texture, I'm a big custard fan too. So it was just, you know, the flavors and that kind of, that whole, you know, the cold with the custard and the crisp shell, it was just mind blowing. And for me, you know, I was sitting there at this table looking at the Sydney Harbour Bridge with this beautiful service, and each time someone brought something along, they would explain, you know, a story about it. And then there was Pete was bringing, actually it would have been Amanda bringing wines and saying, which one does everyone like? And, you know, I'm sitting there having no idea and just in awe of the whole experience. And I just fell in love with fine dining and hospitality at that very moment. And I thought, I want to work in this industry. And yeah, from then it was just yeah, love at first sight, first bite rather. And that's sort of how I, you know, I was in comms and marketing, and really you can apply that to any industry you want. And I thought, no, nah, I'm going to follow down this hospitality and food world. And I just threw myself into everything that I could to get better and learn and improve my knowledge, but also palate and understanding and trying to get in people's minds, because I think that makes me, you know, a better storyteller.
Absolutely, it does. And Pete definitely has that effect. I can completely understand. But Lizzie, I've been telling people that come into the restaurant all the time lately that the snow egg was absolutely rubbish and they never need to miss it. So now we've gone the other way.
Sorry. But I mean, luckily all of Pete's desserts are mind-blowing, really. I mean, true. You can't go wrong.
So true. What are the trends that you're seeing at this time of the year? I mean, restaurants are, you know, incredibly busy. What are you seeing kind of that's, you know, happening, or anything that you're noticing at this particular time when you're dining out? Any trends?
You know, yeah, I just feel people are happy to be there, and there's a real pleasure in spending time at a restaurant. And I think, you know, particularly I'm really grateful to front of house staff and, you know, that are dealing with customers, and it's a real joy having those conversations. And then, you know, all the waiters, and they're just filled with excitement telling you about a dish. And that's something I've just noticed a lot lately when dining out, is everyone has time for you. Even in this madness of the Christmas rush, I really feel that, you know, whether it's the waiter or the sommelier, people are taking the time to explain something or answer your questions or tell you something interesting about a producer or why they love that dish or why they love that wine match. And I think for me, that's a really incredible thing, because there's obviously a lot of pressure and stress with everything going on, that there's still the joy in that, which is why I love hospitality. So yeah, I'm noticing a lot of that.
Yeah, I totally agree. There is a sense of, we haven't done this for so long, and, you know, isn't it just great to be in this new phase where we are going outside the house and meeting up with people. But this time of the year is, you know, there's so much anticipation around kind of Christmas and New Year's. But then there, like you said, there is this moment where we just get into summer and things, you know, slow down a little bit, or we certainly hope they slow down a little bit. What represents kind of the summertime for you? You know, like if you closed your eyes and thought about kind of the January, February part of your life, what kind of invokes that for you?
A lot of pottering. I love just going down to my local, you know, butcher or my fruit and veg shop or the markets, and just meandering and deciding, oh wow, that looks really good, I'm going to take that, and I'm just going to head home and do something with it. And there's no pressure, you know. Sometimes the, you know, pre-Christmas rush, you're entertaining, so you're always, you know, I've got to cook this, you've got to be highly organized. But for me, January and February is just this moment of just pottering and cooking what you like and what looks good, and hey, what are you doing, do you want to come over for lunch? Like, it's so less planned, and you know, it's more casual and relaxing, and I think it's always a nice start to the year.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, those days where you kind of wander up to the shops and you go, oh, I might buy some flowers for myself, or I might wander into this little pokey store that, I don't know, I have no need to be in, but it's kind of nice. And afternoon naps, I mean, that's kind of the things that I'm hoping for in January. I don't know if it always happens, but it's such a nice idea.
And I also feel it's, you know, because people haven't booked up so much, that you can be chatting to a friend and they're like, what are you doing? Nothing. What are you doing? You know, and then you all join, and then a lunch turns into a dinner that turns, you know, there's just this freedom and fluidity that I really, you know, for me, that's January for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to ask you, and it is a bit putting you on the spot, but is there, you know, for me, summer and this time of the year, I can almost taste them or smell them in the way that I remember this time, especially as a child and now in my life now. So is there three aromas or flavors that really represent this kind of time of the year for you?
Yes. I mean, it's, and they're probably all food related, but the first one is most definitely panettone. I just wish I was Italian, and obviously I've spent quite a lot of time in Italy. And for me, that smell of panettone is this year it's captured. So that's something I try and have for breakfast a lot. I buy a couple, and I'll grill them in hot butter with my cup of coffee sitting on in the sun on a little deck. That's very much this time of year. I would also say the smell of tomatoes and the vines. I just love it. And it's something I'll hunt. Tomatoes are just really good this time of year. And my little fruit and veg shop, Galuzzo's in Glebe, just have the best ones. And, you know, I toss them. I do a raw tomato pasta a lot, and toss them chopped up through hot pasta with basil and some goat's cheese and olive oil, and it's just the best. And then I would probably say maybe pine needles. We always have fresh Christmas trees, and just that lingering smell when you enter a house, and particularly after Christmas, you know, they're not as vibrant as, you know, in mid-December, but they're still there and they're kind of a bit more dried. And, yeah, that's probably the three smells that remind me of this time of year.
You're so good at explaining those. I love that. It's so invoking. I'm so glad you mentioned the panettone, because I have been given panettones and I never know what to do with it. I'm like, what do I do with this? And I've eaten it kind of just out of the box.
I eat it out of the box, obviously. I always do that. And then just fried in butter for breakfast is just another level. I sometimes actually New Year's Eve, and that's what I did for that midnight New Year's Eve feast, is I made panettone bread and butter pudding, which is just so indulgent. You know, anything with custard. I just nibble it all. I just can't get sick of it. Puddings, just tipped custard on top is pretty good too.
Okay, that's what I'm doing then. This I'm going to make, I'm going to get a panettone and I'm going to make custard. I'm just going to drown it in custard. That's it.
Yeah, good. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Lizzie, thank you for spending some time with me today. It's so nice for the roles to be a little reversed and for me to ask questions of you. I hope that we get a chance to clink glasses sometime soon. But thank you so much for spending the time. I could talk to you all day long, and just lovely to spend some time with you.
Oh, it was such a delight. Thank you so much. I know it feels different, roles reversed, but always a pleasure catching up with you. Wish it was over a glass of wine, but soon.
Definitely soon. I will hold you to that. Thanks again, Lizzie, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
You too. Bye.
This is Over a Glass. I'm Shantae Whale. Stay tuned for more stories from the world of wine and drinks. Listen in every Thursday on your podcast app. Follow us on Instagram at overaglasspod and contact us at overaglass@deepintheweeds.com.au.